I'm Austin Lugo.
I am Brendan Hess.
And this is the Nom Nom Project. So this week we have a rather short podcast due to a variety of reasons. No one's fault in particular, just due to the way the week turned out and the current situation with everything. Still figuring a bunch of things out, but exciting news as far.
It's mostly been the pandemic, actually.
Yeah, it's not our fault. It's the pandemic's fault. It's COVID. It's Omicron. It has nothing to do with us. We did everything in our power. But Omicron has stopped us from using the internet and recording from our own homes. Classic COVID move. But we do have questions and some exciting Vietnam updates. We are officially going to Vietnam the last 2 weeks of June. We're going to have a personal tour guide who's going to lead us across Vietnam. We will not be going to Hanoi because our investor, for some reason, just doesn't want to go to Hanoi. But we will go to a lot of other big and exciting cities and small towns. And we're going to go to the Mekong Delta and all kinds of incredible places. And Brendan and I might go to Hanoi on our own. So who knows? Probably.
Probably. I don't think you can go to Vietnam without going to Hanoi.
It'd be weird not to go to Hanoi. It's one of the two big cities.
It's also where, like, the whole state apparatus is. That's, like, where they got all their museums, all their, like, history stuff.
That's where the government functions, right? In Hanoi, right? That's where the government buildings are?
Most of it, yeah.
Well, we'll find out. But until then, we're here. We're ready. Brandon, let's start off on a lighter note. Well, actually, none of these are really a light note. Some of them are a light note.
Why don't we start with family gatherings?
There we go. Ease our way into it.
So I had a question to you, which was, what sort of gatherings or celebrations are typical of a Vietnamese family? Like, in the United States, for example, you might have Thanksgiving, which is like a state holiday or like a society-wide holiday, but really it's just a time for families to get together and make food for each other. I was wondering, are there celebrations kind of like that that are more informal family gatherings than they are like formal street parades?
Thank you for the long introduction because I needed time to figure out what I was going to say. So thank you for stalling.
I picked up on that. So I was trying to help you there.
So what I chose to talk about was the Hung King Festival. In previous episodes, we have talked about something called the Death Anniversary. The Death Anniversary is a celebration of the passing of an individual. Often a death anniversary happens exactly a year after the original death of that individual, and they do it with most individuals. So this isn't just something for an elder or a baby passing away. They actually do this with almost all their family members, which means a lot of family gatherings and a lot of big family gatherings. And these death anniversaries are typically full of food, and although the first death anniversary is often somber, most death anniversaries after that are really just excuses for the family to come together to celebrate the life of the individual and the life of each other, and to celebrate the lives that they have. But what I want to talk about today is the biggest death anniversary in Vietnam that is actually celebrated across the country and is a national holiday in Vietnam, which is called the Hung King Festival. The Hung King Festival is a celebration, a death anniversary of the original Hung Kings who are thought to have founded Vietnam way back in 2897 BCE. Now, there is a lot of dispute on when the Hung Kings actually took reign. The traditional Vietnam history books and legends say that date 2987 BCE. Some anthropologists have argued that it probably wasn't until around 1000 BCE, maybe even 800 BCE. But it is known that the Hung Kings did reign for at least 10 generations, which is just an incredibly long time for any sort of civilization to exist, especially one surrounded by much larger dynasties like the Chinese dynasty only a couple of miles to the north. And so in celebration of that, every year on April 2nd, the people of Vietnam pilgrimage to a small village called Pho Thu, I believe, which is at the foot of a mountain. And along this path, which leads all the way up to the mountain, there are these churches. There's Buddhist churches, Catholic churches, all different kinds of churches. It's sort of a religious holiday, but it's not religious holiday in the way perhaps Easter is, in the sense that it's not attached to one religion. It's more that it's a religious holiday in which every religion kind of comes together and they're all sort of celebrating the same day. They're all kind of recognizing the history of Vietnam. And in many ways, it could be likened to Thanksgiving, in the sense that if you think back to your elementary school days here in the United States, Thanksgiving was seen as a day to quote unquote teach American history. Of course, that's full of its own problems of propaganda. And that's not to say that other countries don't do the same. That's not to say Vietnam has their own form of propaganda, as every country does. But it is a day about learning about the history of Vietnam, the original people of Vietnam, the Hung Kings, how they've come to the moment they are. But unlike Thanksgiving, which is typically very American in the sense that it's about small communities, small families, it's very internal, it's a lot of looking in, Vietnam is more about celebrating the larger community. So the Hung King Festival, instead of being with your own family, you go to these very large festivals, the biggest one being in Pho Thu. People travel from across Vietnam to go to this festival. And you come together, you learn about Vietnam, you learn about how great it is, there's parades, you pilgrimage up a mountain, which sounds challenging and complicated. You stop at churches along the way, you eat a lot of delicious food. Once you get to the top, there is a traditional bronze drum musical gathering thing in which they play these cool bronze drums, and that's sort of to signify the beginning of the festival. It's played every single year since, as long as Hung King Festival's been around, really. And then after that, they love to play human chess. Like, that's just really big in Vietnam. Like, every festival, they have human chess, which is just like chess, but with actual people. I mean, like, no one's like...
What, like in Harry Potter?
Yes, but no one's, like, actually dying. Like, there's no, like, swords or anything like that. But it's just, like, people standing in a giant chessboard and then, you know, being led around by other people, I guess. I don't know. It sounds fun. I would love to play a pawn. I would want to be a pawn in a human chess tournament.
I'm the king, baby. That's the only way I'm playing that game. That sounds like a very fun festival. Not something that would fly in the United States, because pilgrimage up a mountain? That's way too much physical exercise for an American. For a holiday, too? No. A true American holiday is one where you're sitting around drinking beer and eating way too much unhealthy food. And if the unhealthy food is along a mountain trail where there's exercise involved, you're going to find me at home on Vietnamese Thanksgiving. Let me tell you that.
I'd say if they had a Hung King Festival in the U.S., they would probably quickly adopt bicycles and then motorcycles and then Uber / ever ride sharing services,
and then they do the whole thing digital
in the metaverse.
Yeah, exactly.
But it sounds like a really great time. Unfortunately, we will miss it this year, which kind of sucks, because it sounds like of all the festivals, this is sort of the, I wouldn't say the biggest, because Vietnam takes their festivals very seriously. I mean, they just have tons of festivals all of the time. And we've talked about a lot of festivals before on the podcast and in our individual videos, but this one definitely seems like the most awe-inspiring in a sense. I think there's something almost religious in that sort of pilgrimage up the mountain. I think there'd be a lot of great feelings and emotions walking up that mountain. Of course, very different for me than someone who was born and raised in Vietnam, but I think it'd be fascinating to be part of that community and to experience this day of celebration of the Vietnamese people, the Vietnamese culture, and to eat a ton of food while walking up a mountain. Doesn't sound too bad either.
Does not sound bad at all, man. Is there a bench at the top of the mountain? Like, surely there's at least somewhere to sit down.
There's like a small community, like it's a small little city at the top. So, do you think they bring the brass drums up there every year, or do you think they just leave them up there?
That's for the true Vietnamese Chads. That's like, if you're doing something and you want to show off, you'll be the guy bringing the brass drums up there. It's like the guy who actually tries during the Boston Marathon Like, most of them are just jogging to get in, like, their steps for that month or whatever. But, like, the people trying to, you know, actually win. That's the Vietnamese guy bringing the brass drums up to the... Who actually is like, I'm going to win the Boston Marathon. Not very many people.
Is that what you think the Boston Marathon is? You have to qualify to be in the Boston Marathon.
I thought you could just run it. Oh.
No, you have to qualify to be in the Boston Marathon.
I thought for sure that it was just like a community. Okay, well, let's replace Boston Marathon with like any other city marathon. No other city takes their marathons that seriously. That's just the Vietnamese equivalent. Bring the brass drums up the hill.
I wonder how long that trip is up the mountain. I couldn't find, like, I don't know if this is like an hour or if it's like, I don't think it's more than like 2 hours. Like, it's not a whole day thing. I'm pretty sure by like noon, you're at the top of the mountain. But it still sounds fun.
Is there road access? Like, is there an easier way up that I can just, like, take a moped?
Probably. I mean, how else do they get all the supplies up there?
I didn't think of that. Helicopter. It's a very expensive place to live. Amazon deliveries cost, like, $100 per package. It's not great. But it's beautiful up there. I imagine it is quite beautiful up there. So maybe we'll just have to visit even on the off-season.
Yeah, I think we should still be able to... do the walk. Like, you can do the pilgrimage year-round. I don't think it's like a mysterious hike that's impossible to find. It's probably even paved. It's probably a paved pathway all the way up there.
There's probably a series of trail markers and decorations and various things that indicate that you're on the path. Should we bring our own brass drums and have our own, like, American Vietnamese... What was it called? Ha Kong? What was the...
Hung Kong.
Hung Kong.
Hung King.
Hung King.
Hung King.
Maybe we should have our own American Hung King just on the day that we're there.
That's the most American thing I've ever heard.
That might go over pretty well, I think. Just playing brass drums all the way up the hill.
Very poorly, because neither of us know how to play the brass drum.
Well, it's just about rhythm, right? Like, as long as you're playing music in spirit.
As long as you're playing loudly. That's the American way.
Yeah. You just gotta be as loud as possible.
All right. Moving on, Brandon, the next question is for you. Something a little more somber, something perhaps not quite as happy-go-lucky. Can you talk a little bit about the common practices of funerals in Vietnam?
So the way you hold funerals changes a little bit depending on what religion you are. But if you're like most Vietnamese people, you're an atheist or you don't strictly believe in any organized religion. So the chances are that you will have a more loose kind of go with the flow type of practice. Like there's no like formal guidelines for most Vietnamese people on how to hold a funeral. But generally speaking, the way it goes is once a person passes away, the family has to pick a time to hold, not a funeral, but really more of like, sources call it more of like a celebration, really, than a funeral. It's about remembrance, but it's also about celebrating the person's life, more so than an American funeral, where really it's just about consoling yourself and being sad with your family. So you'll have to pick a day for the celebration, and there's two ways you can go. The first way is where you simply have a day where the family meets and then for the next 3 or so days, different groups of people will be allowed to see the body until eventually it's cremated. Pretty much everyone in Vietnam is cremated, and that's been the case for what seems like forever, really. And if you are having a traditional Vietnamese funeral, you're probably going to, and this is the most fun part, I think, about it, is that you're going to put the body on a funeral pyre, actually, and burn it Viking style. Which is not very common. I don't think that most countries allow you to do that anymore. But in Vietnam, it's actually common practice. Another way you might do it is by having the body cremated quietly after everyone who wants to see it sees it to say their last words or remarks. And then for the next few periods of time, the family or loved ones of the deceased will get together on celebration days. And so I believe those days are 7, 49, and 100 days after the person's death. There will be like special days that the family gets together.
Then is cremation almost always the case? Are there any sort of burial services? Because I know in traditional Catholicism, which I know has transitioned since then, that you couldn't burn the body for a long time, or originally they had to be buried, but I don't think that's the case anymore. I'm not a Catholic, so I don't want to speak for the Catholic people.
Christianity had already been reformed by the time the French came to Vietnam. And also, Vietnam is like a very wet place, so...
Not a lot of places to bury people.
Historically speaking, yeah, exactly. It's like, if you bury a body, chances are very high that it's like not going to stay in the ground very well for large parts of the country. So cremation is just the most practical thing.
Well, kind of jumping off of that, speaking on what I spoke of earlier, though I suppose I could go into much more depth here, is the death anniversary, which is very much related to the funeral practices. As I spoke of before, the death anniversary is a day of communal gathering. Typically, large families come together. It's not just immediate family, but it's often cousins, second cousins. In a lot of ways, they can be likened to a sort of family get-together, I guess is a good way to put it. It's often an excuse just for families to get together. The first year is pretty solemn. I mean, it's been exactly a year since the death of this person, so of course you would imagine that it's not a very festive day. Often people wear black on this day. It's very formal. It's a day of mourning more than anything else. It's a day of remembrance of all the things the person offered to the family and the community. But at its core, it really is a day of grief and sort of let go of that grief or come to terms with that grief. It's a day that faces the grief head on, crying, sobbing, facing those emotions in a way that often day of funerals, because it's so close to the death, it's hard to have those sort of moments, and having a year to come to terms with it is a great way to re-examine the life and death of the person. The second year takes a hard left turn. This is often seen in Vietnam as the end of the mourning period. This is because this is seen when a person transitions from death to life after, no matter if you're Buddhist, Christian. It's kind of across the spectrum. That's just kind of the more cultural laying down a foundation for these religious beliefs. And often on the second death anniversary, they will burn all the belongings of the individual. I suppose partly because they burn the body, it's a way to sort of give them to the dead, those that have passed away, but also a way of moving on. It's also a day of celebration. This year there's a lot more food, a lot more fun, less mourning. People aren't wearing black anymore. It's not nearly as formal. It's a day to celebrate the life and celebrate, I suppose, the end of a mourning process, which, even though, of course, when someone close to you dies, there's always part of you that remembers them and moves on, but especially in the Vietnamese culture, it's very important to accept the death and, I don't want to say move on is the right word for it, but I think often in many Western cultures, there's this need to bemoan deaths and hold on to it forever and kind of act as if, you know, this is kind of a pain. And if you don't feel pain every time you think about the death of this person, you're somehow immoral or something wrong with you. The views, at least in general, tend to be more that of acceptance, forgiveness, and building a path forward, which of course is inspired by Confucianism and Taoism and Buddhism, which all have their own forms of accepting the world as it is, accepting death, and moving on. And I think that's something incredibly powerful, and I can certainly see the benefits of it. And I do wish that was something that you saw here more in the United States. I mean, to gather around even a year after someone's death is incredibly rare. Often after someone dies, it becomes, and this is, right, the very American, independent, very solo, make it on your own sort of thing, is when someone dies, it's your pain to suffer. And while you may have a funeral where everyone comes around, they're grieving their own grief. They're not grieving with you. It's not our grief, it's their grief, and then you're just supposed to kind of bury that deep down inside until, well, I guess until you die. I think by having these death anniversaries, you're forced to grieve within a community. You're not allowed to just hold your own grief. And you're also forced to recognize their death that I think a lot of people try to move as far away from as they can. I mean, once the funeral, once the burial's done, often people will never speak of the death again. And I think that can be very harmful for the individual. And I think having these death anniversaries is very powerful. And the fact that you don't see it in more parts of the world is honestly sort of surprising. And I think there's a lot of power in it. And I certainly hope that upon my death, we can have some sort of death anniversary, because I think that'd be pretty dope. Plus, it strokes my ego that every year people get together just to talk about me.
I will certainly arrange for your body to be placed on a pyre to be lit on fire.
That's all I ask.
You know, that's actually legal in Wyoming. That's the only state where you can do that.
Really?
Yeah. You have to get, like, special permits and everything.
Well, it sounds like you're going to have to take me to Wyoming. I don't know how you transfer a dead body across state lines. I don't know what that process looks like.
Can't be that hard, right?
I don't know.
Are they keeping track of their dead bodies? Like, once it goes to a morgue, how hard is it to steal a dead body from a morgue?
You know, there's a book on my bookshelf that I'm looking at right now called Stiffed, which is a series of nonfiction essays, stories about the process post-death of an individual. And apparently there is a lot of corruption in the morgue industry. So yeah, a lot of questionable things going on with these bodies. So you have to bribe some people along the way. I'm willing to take that.
Well, I was hoping to do your funeral as cheaply as possible, but that would mean zero bribes. But yeah, it is crazy how expensive funerals are, isn't it? It's like, it's just a body, you know? People out here paying for premium coffins, like, who's even going to know that you were buried in that coffin? It's underground. It's criminal to look at the coffin once it's been buried.
Burials, in general, I find to be weird and strange and baffling. I mean, I get it in ancient times because they thought something about the body coming back to life or something of that nature. Like, I get that, but we know that that doesn't happen. I mean, the whole reason we started burying people 6 feet underground is because we were terrified that they were going to come back to life. So we're like, 6 feet minimum, or else they're going to come back and zombie us or something.
Did they think that the world was full of roaming zombies just like ravaging the land before the Christians came? I guess they did in a way. You know, like, everything was just hellish. Seems a little bit extreme to me. I've been listening to some history podcast about prehistory evolution. And apparently, there are these graves of people who were somehow able to collect, like, large amounts of wealth despite not living in farming-based societies. Even though they were hunter-gatherers, they collected extraordinary amounts of wealth, which implies that people were giving wealth to them. So there was some sort of community there. But the weird thing is that wealthy people in prehistory almost always have, like, some sort of weird genetic disorder. Like, the wealthiest people among the cavemen were, like, the dwarves or the little people, or, like, extremely tall people, or people who had weird skull shapes, or, like, people who just had, like, strange genetic things going on with them. That was how you got rich back then, was you were just literally born different.
I mean, I guess perhaps it has something to do with maybe the idea of being blessed by some god or some sort of ancient, I don't know, or maybe just the advantages of having different genetics. You're able to do things the average person wasn't able to do. I don't know. Hard to say.
Very strange, though. Better times, I think. I would prefer if the most eccentric of us were the wealthiest rather than the most able to cheat their way into owning lots of property. But that's neither here nor there.
All right, Brandon. Well, this rather short podcast is coming to a quick end. We don't seem to have any more questions for the day, but is there anything else you wanted to bring up? Anything you learned this week about Vietnam, about the history of Vietnam, about the culture of Vietnam, anything about Vietnam that you found interesting or feel like we need to talk about here?
Not that I can think of.
All right, y'all. Thank you again for listening to this rather short episode, but hopefully a entertaining episode as ever. You can find this podcast wherever you hear podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok at The Nom Nom Project. And please go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/lifethroughfiction for early access and exclusive content. Thank you all for listening.